This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for June the 14th, 2024. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending June 14th, 2024. Reading today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Richard Stead.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe-Tracy. The headlines today are Shock for Shoppers as Stores Close, Lawyers' Victory in Helicopter Appeal, and Work Starts on EV Superhub. So, may we have the first headline story, please, Nikki?
Which was Shock for Shoppers as Stores Close. Concerns raised, but civic chiefs say it's healthy. Winchester has been hit by three store closures, the latest in a series this year. Announcing their closure in recent days has been Halfords in Eastern Lane, Winnell, Mooch in St. George's Street, and the long-established Bell Fine Art in Parchment Street. Several other stores have or are closing: Pavilion in the Square, Phase 8 and Echo in the High Street, and CGC Emporium in the Brook Centre. Concerns have been raised about the increasing number of cafe and restaurants and the reduction in shops as much trade shifts online. But civic chiefs say there is no reason to be concerned and that the city centre remains thriving. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester BID, said, "It's very healthy. I think there's a few closures recently, but our vacancy rate is very, very low, and some of the closures are because of retirements, in the case of the smaller, independent shops." He disputed there is currently a high turnover rate of businesses in Winchester. He said, "I would not call it a high turnover rate. We've got lots of businesses that have been here for many, many years." On high rental prices, he said, "Yeah, it isn't the cheapest place to run a business, but that's because it's a good place to operate for a business." City Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Portfolio Holder for Business and Culture on the Lib Dem-controlled council, said, "I think business in Winchester is thriving, and our high street is really thriving. We have an incredibly low vacancy rate at 4%. The national average is 13%, and around the rest of the city it is 7%. Last week, the Chronicle reported that there were signs of commercial activity in one of the city's longest empty shops, the Toy Cupboard in St. George's Street. A spokesman for letting agents Green and Partners said the landlord was undertaking work to make it more lettable. It has been empty since June 2021. Residents have been voicing their concerns over the closure of another major retailer in Winchester. Dave Courtney, 63, of Fivefields Road, Highcliffe, said, "At the end of the day, it's a handy store and the next closest one to us is in Eastleigh or Basingstoke. I think it should stay here or we won't have anything here. It really is handy, but they keep shutting all these shops." David Bourne, 59, of Jury Street, called the closure a shame. He said, "A lot of people are not capable of doing the maintenance of their cars or bikes, and the shop helps with that. It's a shame to see them shutting, because it has been there a long time and a lot of people are employed there. It would be sad to see it empty." Frank Sanderson, 79, of St. Cross Road, said, "We're losing everything. We really need to keep it. Shops are closing everywhere and everything is going on the internet. I don't like to shop on the internet as I like to see things in person and make sure of the quality. When you get something from the internet by post, it is more than likely not the same quality or even the same colour of what you thought you were getting. People do not want that."
Thank you. Now, Richard, please.
The headline: Lawyers' Victory in Helicopter Appeal. A city lawyer has won a hollow victory in his appeal against restrictions on the number of helicopter flights to his 1.3 million country mansion. Mayor Scaria of Stapleford Lane, Durley, disputed Winchester City Council's decision to limit the number of helicopter round trips to the property to a maximum of 2 private flights per month. The decision has been made to protect the amenities of the occupiers of nearby properties, in the words of the council. Mr. Correa wanted to wanted no restrictions on the number of flights he could take. However, the planning inspector, whilst upholding the appeal, limited the number of flights to 24 per year, essentially still limiting it to 2 per month. Mr. Correa had applied to remove the clause in question altogether. The City Council had granted planning permission to install a helipad and a basketball court. Council planners specified that the helipad was to be used for private purposes only. Mr. Correa, however, intends to use it to fly his clients in and out of Durley. The appeal decision now states that the helipad, hereby approved, shall be used for purposes ancillary to the residential use of the dwelling known as the Three Gables. This potentially opens the door to Mr. Correa to use the helipad for professional purposes. City Councillor Steve Miller downplayed the local backlash against potential disturbances caused by helicopters. A few people have been upset by it, but there hasn't been too much of an issue. The original application sparked some 20 objections. Councillor Miller did not see any cause for concern, saying that the helipad might not even be used as much as often as the twice as month limit. Mr. Correa and Durley Parish Council have been approached for reaction.
Norma?
Work starts on EV Superhub. Construction has begun on a controversial EV charging hub north of Winchester. Instavolt, the company in charge of the project, held a groundbreaking ceremony to mark the occasion. Located at Three Maids Hill near the A34, the hub will have 44 rapid charging bays, including a drive-through bays for larger vehicles and accessible charging bays, as well as the on-site restaurant and play area. Planning officers had argued against the site, but the planning committee overruled them, approving the plans last December. There are also concerns that the area is becoming too built up after other projects, including a waste recycling centre and an anaerobic digestion facility, were waved through. Those in favour of the charging hub, however, have stressed the urgent need for sites such as the one at Three Maids Hill. Speaking last December, City Councillor Danny Lee of the Green Party said, "We're in a climate crisis and we have a shortage of chargers. We need to encourage the use of electric vehicles." Basingstoke Instavolt is the UK's largest rapid EV charging network, and the CEO, Delvin Lane, said, "Three Maids is the first of our new generation of super hubs. It represents a major landmark for us and will be game-changing for EV drivers. Linking the south with the Midlands and beyond, the site will be a gateway to the Jurassic Coast and the southwest for EV drivers, who will be able to head off south confident in the knowledge that they will be able to stop off, have a convenience of contactless payments, and get a fast and reliable charge." City Councillor Kelsey Lear at Lerney, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, gave the plans her full backing when it came to last year. Councillor Lerney joined Delvin Lane for the groundbreaking and said, "Switching to electric vehicles is key part of our strategy for the decarbonising going forward, and facilities like this play an important part in enabling that. Work on the Three Maids is part of the Instavolt new phase of growth to deliver on its commitment to install 11,000 ultra-rapid chargers in the UK and Ireland."
Thank you. That concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. So now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, first person and editorial comment. And then we'll continue with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Boyle. Dermot Boyle, MBE, died peacefully at home on Friday, the 31st of May, 2024, aged 85 years. Buckle, John Sidney Buckle, died suddenly at home on 25th of May, 2024. Burge, Richard, or Dick Burge, of Itchendown Farm, Itchen Abbas, died peacefully on the 22nd of May, 2024, aged 80 years. Captain Matthews, RN, Michael John, Captain Matthews, sadly passed away peacefully after a decline in health, Sunday 19th of May, 2024, aged 83 years. Goody, Guy Goody, died peacefully on the 9th of May, 2024, aged 93 years. Gordon, Mary Isabel Gordon, died peacefully at Tegfield House on the 19th of May, 2024, aged 88 years. Green, Christopher David Green, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on 22nd of May, 2024, aged 73 years. Martin, Edwin William Martin, known as Eddie, passed away peacefully on the 7th of June, 2024, aged 85. Merritt, Dennis Oliver Merritt, passed away peacefully at Challoner House on 28th of May, 2024, aged 98 years. Phillips, Peter Phillips of Brambridge, passed away peacefully on 30th of May, 2024, aged 94 years. Wheeler, Keith Noel Wheeler, sadly passed away peacefully at home on Monday the 20th of May, 2024, aged 82 years. And lastly, Wilson, Nikki Wilson, sadly passed away on the 28th of May, 2024, aged 83. Now we'll go to Christian comment, which is being read by Nikki.
And it's headed, Appreciating the Fragility of Life. As one of those people who buys books on healthy lifestyle and then never gets around to reading them, I'm a very poor disciple. It was recently recommended I follow the advice of the best-selling author and BBC broadcaster, Dr. Michael Mosley. Although I haven't yet got around to following it, Dr. Mosley, who tragically died this week while on holiday in Greece, developed his diet and lifestyle program as part of a mission to find a drug-free way to cure his own diabetes, a strategy which many others have adopted through his writing and broadcasting. Dr. Mosley was not a religious person, although he came from a family of Christian missionaries. Speaking about his beliefs, he said the nearest he came to religion was incorporating fasting into his diet. Too often, religion is seen as a group of people who set themselves apart from others, who have different or no belief. Alternatively, being religious can be seen as a personal attitude and way of acting. A religious person need not follow a particular faith, but may instead concern themselves with values, purpose, and meaning, along with an appreciation for the wonders of our bodies, lives, and world. Awe for creation and our existence in the world cultivates humility and a sense of responsibility to try to act in ways that will contribute to what is good for ourselves and others. Dr. Mosley had been described as a national treasure in the field of medical science. His drive to discover healthier ways of living shows he appreciated the fragility of life. He has certainly contributed much to the lives of others through his calling. One of the things that struck me was the comments of his colleagues on the BBC, who said Michael was kind and generous on screen, but when he was not on screen, that was exactly who he was as well. Another co-presenter said the same thing. On screen and off screen, he was the same person. How many of us can say we are our authentic selves in every circumstance of our lives? Yet our values and way of acting are what religion authentically is, whatever we may believe. Dr. Mosley achieved a great deal. Being remembered as a person who was authentic and the same person in public and private may seem insignificant, but for me is the most important as the way we act in the world can have a significant and lasting impact. In our gospel reading for this coming Sunday from Mark 4, the humble mustard seed grows completely out of proportion to itself, creating a huge plant. Jesus was teaching us how to live healthy, authentic, spiritual lives. He reminds us how God's kingdom operates through the smallest of actions. Simple human acts of kindness and generosity can join together to make something bigger. Our thoughts and prayers go to Dr. Mosley's family, friends, and colleagues, and to the families of others who have died this past week. And that was the Reverend Fiona Genvie of Rumsey Abbey.
Thank you. There are 10 letters this week, beginning with one read by Richard.
The headline, Man of Principle. The late, sadly missed, Michael Fontes was a member of Winchester College Common Room for some 30 years and taught economics to the Prime Minister when the latter was at the college. Like many members of that common room, Michael was far from being a Tory, but he held Rishi Sunak in high regard, and one would have been astonished to learn that Michael had been unsupportive of and spoken out in public against any of his former pupils, despite their different political views. Of course, Michael was a man of principle and a gentleman. This comes from John Seeger Green of the Hospital of St. Cross, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
And this one is a howl of protest. Winchester Cathedral has many national treasures. One of them is Andrew Lumsden, who was director of music for the cathedral for the last 20 years. Along with other correspondents, it's difficult to believe that Andrew would voluntarily resign from his post when at the peak of his powers as choirmaster and conductor of the choral music with national orchestras and soloists. In the absence of clarity about his departure, rumours abound, especially with the last two issues of Private Eye, no doubt written by a cathedral mole, suggesting that Andrew was pressurised to resign. Needless to say, there have been a howl of protest from the choral scholars, lay clerks, singers and the public, all of whom have rejoiced under Andrew's very capable baton. To counter the rumours, let us know what really happened. One hopes that the Dean and Chapter will be forthcoming so we can better understand this crisis. Lastly, wishful thinking, I know, is it too late for Andrew to be welcomed back? And that's from John Harding, CBE, St John Street, Winchester.
I'll continue on the same vague theme. Cathedral music. The crisis with the cathedral's music continues apparently without resolution, and I should like to draw attention to another issue, and one which may lie at the heart of the matter. My earlier letter suggests economies were the cause of... My earlier letter suggests economies were the cause, and that was in Chronicle Letters, June the 6th. While music of world-class standing, for which the cathedral is renowned, demands a huge budget and may have provoked thoughts of cuts and saving, issues of diversity and inclusion have also been mentioned. Every such move, for some, is bad, but it has to be acknowledged that one excellent change in this direction has been the establishment of the Girls' Choir, which is, even now, celebrating its first 25 years. There is, then, a place for issues of this kind, but they should not be allowed in a rush for fashionability to trample over 1,000 years of history and destroy at a stroke an irreplaceable heritage of glorious achievements, wondrous evening songs among them, which give pleasure and have meaning in today's more secular outlook. It would now be wise for the Dean and Chapter to come clean and put an end to the speculation. Better, surely, to be open with all who love the cathedral and, best of all, to offer clear explanations and full justifications for the direction they are proposing to take the cathedral's music. And that from Dr. Andrew Thompson, The Firs, Full Flood, Winchester.
The next letter is from Mike Biden and headed Upset by Sunak. Many of your readers will have been as appalled and upset as I was about Rishi Sunak's failure to fully represent our country at the D-Day remembrance events. What I find incomprehensible is how that can have happened. He proudly talks about being a Winchester boy, schooled at our famous college. Whilst there, he would have been in the combined Army Cadet Force, doing military-style training in preparation to do his duty as an officer if the time was to come. He must have thought it a good idea, as he is proposing reintroducing national service. The college has the largest private war memorial in the country, where hundreds of his predecessors at the school are remembered for their ultimate sacrifice. He will have visited and passed through it many times. Remembrance services are an important annual event in Winchester, with its long association with the Army. He must remember this. He is reputedly known for being all over the detail. When he called the election, did he not check his diary? Did he decide some time ago, as has been suggested, that he could skip some of the events, or was a recent invite to do a TV interview just too tempting? Whatever the reasons, Sunak's dereliction of duty to represent our country and his lack of respect reveals he is not fit to lead one of the great political parties, nor be our PM. And that's from Mike Biden of Northbrook Close, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
War and Peace. The editorial comment chronicle the 6th of June, Lessons of D-Day, is still pertinent, prompted me to quote a phrase from Plato's early works, Si vis pacem para bellum, if you want peace, prepare for war. Rather pertinent during troubled times, past and present, and that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Mm-hmm. And this headed Welcome Site. The indicative images of a proposal for Central Winchester, formerly known as Silver Hill, provided by Tom Pocock in last week's Chronicle, June the 6th, should be applauded for giving us something to look at and reflect upon. The Friars Gate surgery may have become a park of sorts, and King's Walk may have received what the late, great Hugh Thomas would have called a layer of lipstick. But it has been a long time since we've seen anything by way of new development proposals for the city's most important development site. Major regeneration is inevitably a slow process, but it's been 6 years since the City Council, adopted the supplementary planning document for the project, and more than 2 years since it began its search for a development partner to make it happen. Now that the Council has chosen its partner, a syndicate of four developers known as Jigsaw, there will be, hopefully, something to see sometime soon. But in the meantime, we have Tom's images to stimulate debate. I suspect that these images will be criticised for the ambitious, possibly grandiose nature of the design created by AI. However, a key point to take from this exercise is that because a council can take a longer-term view of any financial returns as compared to any commercial developer, and because it can include in its calculations the associated economic, social and cultural benefits that the scheme could provide for the whole city, it can afford to be ambitious. Such ambition should be apparent in the quality of the design and in the provision of the public space, but whether this has been allowed for in the context of the contract between the council and Jigsaw has yet to be revealed. Tom's efforts also serve to remind the council, should it need reminding, of the considerable and enduring interest of local residents in this important project. Relative to most comparable centres, Winchester's High Street has held its own, but it remains under stress and it needs the support that a well-considered regeneration of Silver Hill could provide. Here's hoping, and that's from Kim Gottlieb in East Stratton.
The next letter comes from E. Wright of Eastleigh, and it's headed Debt Questions. Robert Pitt's letter, that's in the Chronicle May the 30th, discusses the indebtedness of some of Hampshire's local authorities, and in particular he highlights the dire situation at Eastleigh Borough Council. Despite warnings and advice from central government and the Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy about excessive borrowing, local politicians in Eastleigh insist they know best. Moody's, the top independent international credit rating agency, has also expressed concern and named Eastleigh as the third most at-risk council in England. They go on to say that Eastleigh's borrowing level is 41 times its annual income. Mr. Pitt, however, quotes incorrect figures for Eastleigh's councillors. The Lib Dems currently hold 35 of the 39 seats in the borough, with the remaining four held by three independents and one conservative. The council has had a Lib Dem majority since 1994, and the same leader for all of those 30 years. Now Eastleigh's Lib Dems want us to elect one of their councillors to be our next Member of Parliament, which would compound the present situation even more. It would mean more overdevelopment and more debt, no scrutiny, no second opinion, nobody held to account. Eastleigh has unequivocally morphed from democracy to autocracy. And that letter was from E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Chancellors Ford, Eastleigh.
Access fear. I don't know whether you have recognised that there are two parts to the development of Barton Farm. There is one area that is called King's Barton, which, by looking at the properties, is assumed to be upmarket. Then there's the other side, which is called Barton Farm, almost a separate development. Now, having visited both sites, I have observed that the roads are hardly wide enough, shall we say, to take transports which are going to have to be negotiated, that is, fire, ambulance, bus, school bus and commercial vehicles. As you know, it's not actually completely developed into the 2,000 dwellings as yet. I dread to think of the chaos that will come, especially when the rest of the development, the commercial development, the school development, comes into play. So, the closing of Andover Road, the one road that we have never had any problems with, it takes you out of the city, out into the countryside, and from the countryside it brings you into the city, and of course, onto the A34. To break it down would be ludicrous. One example, Hyde Street was closed. The chaos that happened from that closure to North Wars was incredible and had to be readdressed and reopened. I would beg to say that this is what's going to happen with the closure of part of Andover Road to allow vehicles to get into Barton Farm development. There's no logic to it, and I honestly don't think that this is going to work. They need to think hard and long about this one. Leave Andover Road alone, because you're going to have multiple problems. In my previous letters concerning Barton Farm, I have counted 12 children playing very close to the main road. Residents have told me that there is not enough of area for children to play. The volume of traffic that is going to be very close to the front entrance to some of the properties will be intimidating. It needs a lot of people who are proposing closure to go and have a good look at exactly what's happening anyway. There is going to be another school of some kind. Something's got to happen there, and with the development that is being proposed for the barracks, I cannot see the sense to even consider closing Andover Road. And that's from Eileen Berry of Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Headed Disdain Boosted. My disdain for the Liberal Democrat Party was hugely boosted this week when they announced their supremely populist, fully costed election policy of spending £9.5 billion on the National Health Service, dental services and social care. Painlessly funded, magically of course, by the supremely wealthy through capital gains tax and levies on the banks, fuel companies and firms like Amazon and Google. They have plastered Winchester once again with their nauseous yellow election posters, knowing full well that they will never be in power nationally to have to prove that their policies work. And that from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Letter. Gordon Hauser. Headed Times Change. We would not mount such an operation now. Maybe the 25,000 French civilian deaths would not matter to the powers that be. But once we crossed the Rhine and German civilians started dying, the UN would call a halt. Back then, the Nazis were the elected government, who then stopped elections. The majority of the German population supported them, even aware of the treatment of Jews, until the war looked like a lost cause. The government of Gaza attacked Israel with popular support. The rules seem to have changed. Has my father gone from a war hero with a lifetime of PTSD to a war criminal? And that was from Gordon Hauser, St. James Street, Winchester.
Thank you. Thanks to all the correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Now, Norma's got Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
And this is entitled In the Pink at Moonwalk. 8 staff members from Prince's Mead School, Kingsworthy, completed the annual London Moonwalk, a marathon organised by A Walk the Walk to raise breast cancer awareness. The event on May the 18th and 19th saw particularly participants adorning brightly decorated bras and walking the city streets overnight. The team from Prince's Mead, comprised of teachers and staff, trained in the South Downs National Park after school hours. Their commitment and effort saw them pass the finishing line and exceed their donation goal by raising £5,500 for charity. Lucy Brown, head of pre-prep at Prince's Mead, said, "We are incredibly proud of our team for completing the moonwalk. London looked spectacular, illuminated in pink. The event showcased fantastic and imaginative costumes worn by everyone who participated. Many participants shared their emotional and physical journeys with us, which added a deeply personal touch to the event. A huge thank you goes out to the teams of volunteers stationed on street corners throughout the route. It was truly inspiring to see so many people come together for such an important cause." And there's a photograph of, well, actually, it's a red van, and in front of it are the female and male teachers, all dressed in pink skirts, and they have white T-shirts with bras embroidered on them.
Okay. Now Nikki will read this week's first person, which is by Joanna Lewis.
Headed Action Needed. Everything is being promised in this shouty, eventful election hustings. Everything so far but a commitment to tackling the growing menace of everyday violence towards women and girls. It is a growing menace, and the means to counter it are falling behind. Why not commit to rolling out nationwide the new Winchester Community Safety Partnership initiative detailed in last week's Chronicle? Its Violence Against Women and Girls prevention strategy works with local organisations, universities and schools, plus the nighttime economy, to increase safety, awareness and prevention. This was announced in the week a man was jailed for extremely threatening behaviour to a Southampton woman MP. For the first time in my career as a university lecturer, I have female students writing dissertations on the wider problem, because they were assaulted in their early teens. I have given an extension for an essay to a student recovering months on from a violent sexual assault from her boyfriend at the time. Students from the UK used to living in cities described the fear of moving around at night in London, running from building to building if alone. One master's student had her drink spiked at a busy pub last year. She has no recollection of 3 hours, of withdrawing cash, or why the hospital found ketamine in her system. Why does violence against women and girls still not get taken seriously enough? We've had 100 years plus of female suffrage, which eventually ushered in extension laws on equality. But statistically, an accusation of rape was more likely to result in conviction in the Victorian era than today. Obviously, one part of the answer rests with an attitude among certain men wielding power and influence, which goes back further in time, to the Stone Age. A metropolitan town council recently tweeted, without any evidence, that the victim of a sexual assault in a park was probably a sex worker. The founder of a major UK hedge fund has been accused of numerous assaults and harassment of women. Even if reprimanded or convicted, many have the connections and the money to overturn a verdict. Cue the monster Harvey Weinstein, or women are not believed. For example, the repeated accusations of domestic violence made by the ex-girlfriend of rapper P. Diddy, aka Puff Daddy, until recently video footage came to light. However, these despicable behaviours are not restricted by age or class. Social media is a great leveller and efficient muck spreader. Research has shown that 98% of deep fake social media is made up of pornography, and 98% of that depicts women and girls. This combination of rising volume is increasingly violent forms, and widening availability has more potential to debase how a new generation views the opposite sex. Even seemingly innocent use of computer technology can hold some surprises. Take the online gaming industry. A survey of 4,000 British gamers in 2023 discovered that 49% of female gamers had endured sexual abuse while gaming. Another growing worry is the evidence of misogyny, the irrational hatred of women and girls, within extremist groups in and outside the UK, and increasingly interconnected. They use the internet to spread their negative views of women and of feminism more generally, and to convert other young men to their wider cause. Recently, the Taliban in Afghanistan, the world's worst place to be a woman or a girl, struck up a bromance with Andrew Tate. Never mind, Tate was charged with human trafficking, rape, and setting up a criminal gang to sexually exploit women, or that he created war rooms to teach young men how to groom. Research going back to 2022 has concluded that men who support misogynistic attitudes are over 4 times more likely to support violent extremism. If women and girls are not safe, then no one is safe either. And that was by Joanna Lewis.
Thank you. And now, finally, Richard has the editorial comment.
This is the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle. And it's headlined, "Our High Street is Changing, Not Dying." If you had walked down Winchester High Street before World War II, you would have passed Sainsbury's, Boots, W.H. Smith. Now, if you walk down the High Street and the immediate side streets, you will still pass these three. The High Street has changed, but then it has always been changing. The last butcher, Dewhurst, closed in the late 1980s, although Bainham's had a short spell further up the High Street at the Southgate Street junction early this millennium. Taylor's the greengrocer also lasted just into the 21st century, next to Pizza Express on Bridge Street. People have always grumbled about a perceived surfeit of business types. Back in the 1980s, it was building societies. Then in the 1990s, it was the phone shops. In the noughties, it was books. And now it is cafes and travel shops. 20 years ago, city councillors such as the late Chris Pines lamented the lack of cafes for teenagers to meet. Doommongers will again pronounce the end of the High Street, with a decline in shops and the rise of food and drink outlets. Recently comes news that Mooch in St George Street, Bell Fine Art in Parchment Street, and Halfords in Eastern Lane are all to close. Moot was a strange one, lasting less than a year, so clearly had a questionable business plan. Losing Halfords is a blow, not least because it will encourage people to drive to its other Hampshire locations. Belfine Fine Arts is a real blow, as that was a unique business that had been in the city for nearly 40 years and offered the individuality that places such as Winchester need. The High Street is not dying, but it is changing. In 30 years' time it will have changed again, but it will still be Winchester, the jewel in Hampshire crown.
And now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Norma.
We will always remember them. Thousands of people came out to remember D-Day at events across the country. Events were held to mark the 80th anniversary of the military action. The landings on June 6, 1944, were the largest seaborne invasion in the history. Along with the airborne operations, it marked the beginning of the liberation of France and Western Europe. A tribute was led by retired naval officer Vice Admiral Sir Charles Montgomery at a beacon lighting on Otterbourne Common at 9 p.m. on Thursday, the 6th of June. He gave a speech before lighting a memorial beacon, and Christopher George, chairman of the Winchester and District Royal British Legion, who led the act of remembrance. Mr. George said, "From my point of view, it is important that we remember those who gave so much for our freedoms today. It was an absolute privilege and honour to have been invited by the Otterbourne and Albrook Parish Councils to attend the event, and it was fantastic to see so many people turn out to the event, which was very well organised. Thanks to the generosity of those present at the event, it raised more than £260 for the Royal British Legion Poppy Appeal. It's a shame that Winchester didn't hold more than the service at the Cathedral. However, I am looking forward to organise events to mark VE Day and VJ Day next year. It was an honour to be asked to lead the act of remembrance at such a prestigious event, marking the 80th anniversary of D-Day. The Royal British Legion standard was raised and carried at the event by David Shaw. Mr. George continued, "David is a very experienced standard bearer. He used to train Royal Navy recruits on the ceremonial side. He's very knowledgeable, and he always carries it out with an immense pride in what he does." The members of the Otterbourne Theatre Company sang wartime songs at the event, which had been jointly organised by Otterbourne and Albrook Parish Councils, and there was also a performance of Otterbourne Brass. Across Hampshire, other events were held to mark the occasion. These included a memorial dinner held by the Kingsworthy Royal British Legion and a special service at Winchester Cathedral in the evening of Thursday, June the 6th. Elsewhere in Hampshire, military vehicles took part in a motorcade along the High Street at Southwick Village during the Southwick Revival, while in Romsey, a major event marking the occasion was held in the town's Memorial Park. The national commemorative event was held on South Sea Common, hosted by the Ministry of Defence, and saw the King and Queen attend, as well as Prince William, the Prime Minister Richie Sunak.
Doctors set to open new private practice. Two GPs will open new private practice in Alresford next week. Chalkstream Medical will open its doors on Tuesday, June the 11th, providing comprehensive GP services and other treatments for all ages in Stiles Yard off West Street. Dr. Camilla Nuttall and Dr. James Coutts Donnell believe that there is a potential client base in the area. "We are lucky in the private sector because we have access to a lot of stuff that the NHS GP might not have access to," said Dr. Coutts Donnell. "So we can organise a quick scan or a test that you can't have in the NHS, and it can all be done within a week. The NHS practice around here is actually very, very good. They have an amazing service. It's not like that in a lot of areas. We've had patients driving up to an hour and a half to come and see us." The NHS-run Alresford Surgery is currently the main GP practice in the town. But why open a private practice in Alresford if the public practice is so good? It's actually quite topical, isn't it? Said Dr. Nuttall, referring to the TV debate on June the 4th between the Prime Minister and Sir Keir Starmer, in which one of the key issues was healthcare. I believe people will do absolutely anything for their family member. People can afford dental care. I'm a big believer in preventative healthcare, which unfortunately the NHS can't do huge amounts because it's so costly. But services like health screening can prevent a lot of cancer diagnoses by picking up things earlier, and that's why we both thought of opening the practice. Dr. Nuttall told Hampshire Chronicle she strives to be an approachable, compassionate, thorough and holistic doctor. She is highly qualified as a GP and also offers expertise in women's health, sexual health, fertility and contraception. Dr. Coutts Donald has been a GP since 2015 and is also a trained psychiatrist. In addition to standard GP work, Chalkstream Medical services include mental health, skin checks, fertility services, cancer screening, weight loss, sexual health, and musculoskeletal care. There will also be an aesthetic centre and yoga lessons in the upstairs section of the practice. Prices begin at £120 for 20-minute consultation and £165 for 30 minutes.
Cathedral dispels fears over music. Winchester Cathedral has moved to reassure people over the alleged crisis affecting its music making. The Chronicle has reported concerns raised by former choristers that the cathedral's reputation is at risk following the impending departure of Director of Music Andy Lumsden at the end of July. In a letter supported by 115 people, Edward Bagnall, chairman of the Winchester Cathedral Old Choristers Association, said, "The Dean and Chapter must have considered that the impact in the cathedral's music tradition would potentially be disastrous. No one remotely up to the standard of Dr. Lumsden will take on a permanent position at Winchester if the present structure remains in place." Mr. Bagnall also raised concerns about bullying behaviour towards Dr. Lumsden. Meetings were held with parents of boy and girl choristers, as well as the lay clerks, adult members of the choir. "We share the passion expressed by Mr. Bagnall and the choristers, among others, for ensuring continued excellence in the choral traditions at Winchester Cathedral for now and in the future. We recognise and are grateful for Andy Lumsden's outstanding contribution over the past 22 years, and we can understand the concerns expressed around his departure. We are sorry that our communication around this has not been clearer, and we are taking steps to review and rectify this. We have already started by engaging more closely with those directly impacted and reassuring them that we have the resources available to realise our vision of continued musical excellence. Regarding allegations of bullying and coercive management, we want to be clear that we take the fair treatment and safeguarding of all our staff seriously, and any concerns are handled with the proper care and due process. Our staff and choristers are aware of the internal safeguarding support available, should they have any complaints, including our whistleblowing policy, and anyone else can follow the available safeguarding procedures as found on our website. Whatever the circumstances of any of our employees, we will always respect their confidentiality and privacy." As a short addition at the end, Pilgrim School has asked us to clarify a subheading on last week's front page story. It said, "Cathedral reputation at risk, say choristers." The school would like to make it clear that it refers to the members of the Old Choristers Association and not to current pupils. It should have read ex-choristers.
Evie's Hugh installed as University Chancellor, and this is by Andrew Napier. Comedian and actor Hugh Dennis was installed as the new Chancellor of the University of Winchester at a ceremony held this week. Hugh was presented with his robes of office at the event held in the university's Westend Auditorium. The TV star, best known for his appearances as the long-suffering dad in sitcom Outnumbered and as panellist in Mock the Week, succeeds broadcaster and gardener Alan Titchmarsh. University Vice Chancellor Professor Sarah Greer explained that the role of Chancellor is an especially important one, being the honorary head of the institution and presiding over high-profile events such as graduation. Hugh's professional accomplishments and equally importantly his love and of life and learning and belief in the importance of education make him the perfect choice. I look forward to working with him. Hugh told the audience that he had known and loved Winchester ever since childhood. His grandparents lived near the cathedral. His mother's first teaching job had been at St Swithin's School, and his parents had retired to the city. He said, "Winchester is a very special university, and this is helped by the emphasis put on in-person teaching and making sure that students feel that they are a part of the wider community." Hugh added, "All the people I most admire delight in the younger generation and work for and applaud their successes, and that's what the University of Winchester does." Resplendent in his purple and gold robes, he joked, "This is the most amazing costume I've ever had to wear. If this is the home kit, I can't wait to see what the away strip looks like." The ceremony also saw the installation of two of the university's new pro-chancellors, Mohamed Bakati and Maggie Bruce, who will also undertake ceremonial and ambassadorial roles. All three pledged to uphold the values of the university and commit themselves to serving it in their roles.
Students immersed in rich tapestry of Tuscany. With a delightful blend of Italian language, culture, food, wine and music, a group of Italian language students and friends from Hampshire, led by their teacher Francesca Ardicioni, embarked on an unforgettable journey to the historic city of Lucca. This trip followed last year's memorable performances by famous Italian soprano Silvana Froli and renowned English pianist Richard Pearse, held in the St Nicholas Church in Bishop Sutton and the Chapel of St Cross in Winchester. Venturing through the cobblestone streets of Lucca and exploring nearby gems like Barga, Collodi, Giardino, Garzoni and Fattoria di Pettogranio, the travellers immersed themselves in the rich tapestry of Tuscany. One of the highlights was the private visit to the Teatrino dei Fai in Vetriano, where Silvana Froli and baritone Lisandro Guinness were accompanied by flautist Sarah Tomei and pianist Richard Pearse. From the stirring arias and duets of Tosca, La Bohème and Madame Butterfly to the evocative melodies of Carmen, the repertoire was a celebration of Italian and French opera. The city of Lucca invited Richard Pearse to perform a public recital arranged by Silvana Froli in the historic church of San Pietro Somaldi. Here Richard played the organ that Puccini himself had played. Alternating between the works of Giacomo Puccini, Elgar and other composers, Pearse's performance culminated in a rendition of Puccini's Salve Regina, sung by Silvana Froli. Francesca's students are accustomed to unique experiences, carefully tailored by their teacher and not usually available to tourists. The final dinner, held at the historic and sumptuous Palazzo Tucci in Lucca, was the pinnacle of the five-day holiday. The finest Italian food and wines delighted the group in a sophisticated yet fun atmosphere. Once again, a special bond was woven between Hampshire and Tuscany.
999 workers assaulted. Two emergency workers have been assaulted in Winchester city centre. The incident occurred at approximately 6:50 p.m. at the Co-op in City Road on Wednesday, June the 5th. Two paramedics were assaulted, with one being punched in the face and the other bitten on the arm. A 49-year-old man from Basingstoke has been arrested on suspicion of assaulting by beating of an emergency worker. A police spokesman said, "We were called at 6:50 p.m. yesterday, 5th of June, following a report that two paramedics had been assaulted by a male at the Co-op on City Road, Winchester. One paramedic was punched in the face and another was bit on the arm."
Royal visit. The Princess Royal made a private visit to Winchester Museum on Tuesday. She visited the British Armed Forces Nutrition Programme at the Royal Logistics Corps Regimental Museum in Connaught Road, Worthy Down. The Princess Royal has been a patron of the British Nutrition Foundation since 1988. The foundation works to promote healthy, sustainable diets and to make nutritional science easily accessible for all people.
Night Under Stars helps raise £31,000. More than 100 people have taken part in this year's Big Sleep Out. The annual event, held in the grounds of Winchester College on May the 24th, raises money for Trinity, which provides support for homeless and vulnerable people across Winchester. The event raised £31,000 for the charity. The headline sponsors were Charters Estate Agents and RBC Bruin Dolphin. Entertainment was provided by Integrate Dance, Colin Bell, the Diva Academy, Swan Samba, Millie and Five Shades of Grey, while food was provided by Pier Caramba, Hursley Butcher, Trinity Treats, Homemade Bakery, and Lane Clark and Peacock. The well-being area included yoga from Move with Emma, plus reflexology delivered by Rachel from Reflexology, spelled R-F-L-X-L-G-Y. Tricky. Bushcraft Embers and Draper Tools also supported the event, and prizes were donated by Clue Capers, Everyman Cinema, and B.O.B. Outside Forest School, the High Sheriff of Hampshire, John Whittaker, and Simon Tufnell, D.L. were also there.
Hat Fair to mark 50th. The UK's longest-running festival of outdoor arts, Hat Fair, will be celebrating its 50th year from July 5th to 7th. A summer theatre, music and dance extravaganza set in Winchester city centre, the festival is akin to an adventure playground for all ages. Drawing at least 50,000 people each year, Hat Fair is preparing for a grand opening carnival that will include a parade of school children and community groups dressed in costumes echoing the theme "Look back, look forwards, look up." This festival, established in 1974, had humble beginnings as a hatting event and carries forward its traditions with hatters or performers collecting donations after their performances in hats. A series of distinguished performers, including favourites Garati and Tom, will bring clowning, magic, musical comedy, physical comedy, juggling, unicycling, contortion and acrobatics to the Winchester streets. Hat Fair prides itself on celebrating local and emerging artists. This year, Playmakers Youth Theatre Groups will showcase original book-themed shows, and the Playmakers Top Hat Competition will feature outdoor work by University of Winchester students. The festival will also see performances from local choirs, musicians, jugglers and dancers.
Hampshire Fair members with products to elevate your dishes. As well as fantastic local food and drink at Winchester Food Festival, you will also find products to elevate your dishes, all produced by Hampshire Fair members. There are some you can try and buy at the festival, which returns to Winchester Cathedral's Outer Close on July the 14th. Chefs and foodies alike love lasso leaf. They grow microgreens, microherbs and edible flowers at their specialist farm in Stockbridge. Densely grown and harvested just a few days beyond germination, lasso leaf shoots to thrill. Is perfect for adding vibrant colour and flavour impact to your plates. Back for a second year are Pepper Pot Nurseries. This family-run specialist herb grower from Chawton will have an extensive range of potted herbs for sale at the festival. If you want to add a kick to your meal, visit the Callaloo Corner stand for Caribbean-inspired, homemade, vegan-friendly pepper hot sauces created by founder Christine Lee Wing, who wanted to recreate and share the authentic Trinidadian taste that she grew up with. Also inspired by the flowers of her childhood is Eloina, who launched Eloina's Home Pantry in 2021. She uses fresh, high quality local ingredients and traditional methods to create handcrafted, wholesome preserves in the heart of the New Forest. You'll find her vast selection from jams to chutneys on her stall. 2&1 Olive, an Anglo-Spanish family business, is on a mission to bring the healthy attributes and joy of olive oil to the British diet. Their oils come from 5 generations of olive growers in southern Spain. They run masterclasses in olive oil across the country. You can meet them and taste their oil for yourself at the festival, or join them for a special tapas evening at the Myers Touch on Thursday, July the 11th, as part of a Taste of Winchester. Also showing you can put something different on your plate is Experience Hampshire. They are running an urban foraging workshop on Wednesday, July the 10th, as part of the week-long celebration of Taste of Hampshire. Join forager Freya as she uncovers nettles, wild strawberries, edible seeds, leaves, flowers, fungi, roots and shoots ready to eat in the city centre. Experience Hampshire will also be at the festival. Visit their stand to find out about fun, inspiring and unusual things to do across the county. A Taste of Winchester takes place in the lead up to Winchester Food Festival and has 25 events planned across the district. And there is a picture of Callaloo Corner with all its bottles laid out on the table.
Battle of Cheriton's anniversary event. The Battle of Cheriton will be reenacted on its original site for its 380th anniversary by the Sealed Knot, a historical society. The festivities set to take place on the weekend of July the 27th-28th will also include demonstrations by the Napoleonic Society and the American Civil War Society, as well as representations of the medieval and Viking eras. The event will take place in the field where the Royalists and the Brownheads originally clashed, Scrubs Farm, between Bishop Sutton and Cheriton. Before that, however, the Sealed Knot will be drumming up excitement in full battle gear on Saturday, July the 6th. There will be staged battles and live historical displays where visitors can interact with the people of the past. A variety of food stalls will serve food and there will be a beer tent. The Battle of Cheriton took place on March 29th, 1644, and proved a turning point in the English Civil War. King Charles's forces were decisively beaten by the Parliamentarians, effectively ending the Royalists' hopes of retaking the southeast.
Not so mad after all? Question mark. 50 years ago, the Hampshire Chronicle published an article entitled "Quakers Gone Mad." After half a dozen members of the Religious Society of Friends, a group whose values include living simply, bought a Grade II listed Georgian townhouse in central Winchester. So what prompted the unusual decision? The number of Winchester Quakers blossomed throughout the 1960s, quickly outpacing the living rooms in which they met to worship. These gatherings, or meetings, have been based on stillness and silence since the society was founded in the 17th century, with Quakers, or friends, providing their own ministry in place of a pastor or priest. Early Quakers preached a radical form of quality and peace. with no need for churches, rituals or sacraments. Rather, they felt that religion should be something one lived and acted out each day. These ideas challenged the great political power of the established church, and many Quakers were imprisoned and banned from public life for their beliefs. More recently, Quakers have put their faith to work by campaigning for the rights of prisoners, refusing to fight in wars, meditating in conflicts, and supporting the same-sex relationships and marriage. As the group of 1960s, Winchester grew in size, they also grew in conviction. Their next move would have to benefit more than just friends, but non-Quakers too. After a process of communal reflection, it was decided that the Winchester Quaker Meeting House would be a place that individuals facing hardship could call home. The Quakers bought 16 Colebrook Street in 1973, and less than a year later, the housing project was born. 50 years and many hundreds of tenants later, the project is still alive and well at the Winchester Quaker Meeting House. With 7 bedsits rented out to single occupants who are taking steps towards more permanent accommodation. Some things have changed though. In 1984, family support charity Friends of the Family was founded by 2 Quakers, and while they are now independent, they still call the meeting house home. A few decades ago, Winchester Quakers welcomed AA groups to meet at 16 Colebrook Street, and it's become a meeting place also for other 12-step programs, such as Narcotics Anonymous and Codependence Anonymous. Mental health professionals, holistic health experts, and mediation practitioners run groups and one-to-one sessions at the meeting house. One tenant described it as a secure place with a friendly, non-judgmental community and people I can talk to. A hirer described it as a place of acceptance. People come here with their stories and everybody is accepted. So, were Quakers mad when they bought 16 Colebrook Street to live out their faith and social witness? You tell us.
Fun-filled day for all. The sun shone and crowds flocked to the recent Boaz Project open day and plant sale. Young and old lapped up the feel-good family atmosphere at Hill Farm near Sutton Scotney on Saturday, June the 1st. As usual, there were plenty of colourful plants for sale, as well as handcrafted items with everything from bird boxes to jewellery and jars of jam, all made by Boaz. Family fun and games included Have a Go Catapult, Hook a Duck, and tractor rides around the fields. Live music by the Mantons, a group of medics from Winchester and Basingstoke NHS hospitals, added to the party atmosphere. Other highlights included the opportunity to pet lambs and donkeys who live at the farm. More exotic animals were also on show, including snakes and a rare albino hedgehog. The collection belongs to the family of a former volunteer. Meanwhile, refreshments included cream teas and burgers. Among the visitors was Simon Newland, a retiree. He said, "I must have driven by this place a million times. I had no idea that there was so much going on here. It's great. Perhaps I should volunteer." Claire and Matt Dudgeon from Winchester attended with their sons Oscar 10 and Noah 3. Claire said, "We've had an amazing time. It's friendly, easygoing, relaxed, and things for all ages to enjoy." Boaz manager Stuart Palmer said he was delighted with the turnout. The sun making an appearance was a bonus. Boaz only works because so many people come along and give their time and energy. It really is a volunteer-led project. So from me, a massive thank you to everyone who made the day such a success. The Boaz Project was set up in 2007 to provide adults with learning disabilities an opportunity to work on the land, to be valued and productive. Daily activities on the 4.5-acre site include horticulture, animal care, woodwork, handcraft and cooking. For more information, see boazproject.co.uk.
Lib Dem candidate launches campaign. 200 supporters rallied in Winchester to launch Liberal Democrat Danny Chambers' general election campaign. Mr. Chambers stressed that protecting local NHS services, cleaning up rivers, and the cost of living are his key priorities. He needs to overcome a majority of 985 votes to take the seat won by Steve Bryan for the Conservatives in 2019. At the launch, Mr. Chambers said he wants to protect local NHS services, including Winchester's A&E services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. He called for a feasibility study into three potential sites for a new hospital in or near the city. Mr. Chambers also argued that water executives should be banned from paying themselves bonuses until the dumping stops. He believes the water regulator, Ofwat, should be abolished and replaced with a new regulator. Mr. Chambers said, "Now more than ever, we need an MP who has bold ideas to protect our local NHS, who has the passion and the training to tackle the climate emergency, and who will take action against river pollution." Speaking to voters here in Winchester and the Meon Valley, the message I get back is clear. People are tired of this government which is failing our NHS and failing to tackle the cost of living crisis. It would be the honour of my life to represent the people of Winchester and the Meon Valley. I'm a hard-working and thoughtful candidate who will work all year round to stand up for them in Westminster. Our voting system means that only the Liberal Democrats can beat the Conservatives here in Winchester. Last time we missed out by just a few hundred votes, so every vote counts. A vote for Labour or the Greens would mean a Conservative MP is elected for another 5 years. The Winchester seat has been held by the Conservatives since 2010. Current MP Steve Bryan announced he would be stepping down at the next election last year. As well as Mr. Chambers, the other candidates for the Winchester seat are Chris Barfoot, Independent, Flick Drummond, Conservative, Hannah Dawson, Labour, Andrew Davis, Socialist Democrat Party, Kevin De Cruz, Independent, Lorraine Estelle, Green, Andy Lyming, Hampshire Independents, and Sean Whelan, Reform UK.
Inspectors rate hospice as outstanding. Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices in Sutton, Scotland have been declared outstanding by the Care Quality Commission, CQC. The independent regulator underlined the services provided by the charity, including care and support for more than 500 families each year during their November 2023 inspection. The hospices rely heavily on local community support, as only 12% of their 8 million annual running cost is government funded. Mark Smith, CEO at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "This achievement is a testament to our unwavering commitment to providing exceptional palliative care and support for children, young adults and their families. It reflects our charity's vision, where compassionate support and expert palliative care can be accessed when and where it is needed. It also supports our strategy to reach more families and develop our services and to collaborate with the health system in partnership."
One in 10 jails found barely fit for purpose. A damning report has found that facilities at one out of 10 prisons in England are barely fit for purpose. Independent Monitoring Boards, IMB, monitor prisons and recently published a national annual report on the state of prison and immigration facilities. The report found conditions in Victorian prisons were particularly bad. One of the prisons mentioned in the report was Winchester, where the jail's IMB reported crumbling walls and roofs all over the prison leading to leaks, flooding and slip hazards. In some prisons, maintenance was delayed even when it gave rise to security concerns. In Winchester, there were several occasions throughout the year where the prisoners were able to damage and attempt to dig through cell walls, on one occasion through the wall into the landing using implements like plastic cutlery. Several boards, such as Winchester, reported that the care and separation units, CSUs, were regularly full, with prisoners segregated in cell confinement on the wings instead. CSUs were too often filled with prisoners with severe mental health needs. These prisoners could spend long periods in segregation, frequently more than 100 days, because prison and healthcare staff were unable to arrange for them to be moved to a more suitable location. There was also concerns that many prisoners were being released as homeless, which was especially common for remand prisoners. Pentonville, Helwell and Winchester prisons all reported rates of men released without accommodation of between 40% and 50%. Helwell, IMB, reported that prison staff felt it necessary to equip men who were being released homeless with warm clothing. The women's estate faced similar challenges, mostly due to shortages of probation staff and the difficulties around liaison between the complex work of agencies. At Bronzefield, a survey carried out by the IMB in February-March 2023 showed that only 28% of women were released to sustainable accommodation and 31% were released homeless. Elizabeth Davies, the chairman of the Independent Monitoring Boards, IMB, was asked whether Victorian jails should be closed as a way of solving issues with prison infrastructure. Ms. Davis says, "I think the quick answer is yes, Victorian prisons should be closed. But I don't think the problem with the infrastructure is limited to Victorian jails at all. So I think infrastructure is about more than just the age of the buildings." It alluded to rightly by Charlie Taylor, the Chief Inspector of Prisons, infrastructure goes beyond that issue to a considerable degree. And there is a picture, an aerial picture of Winchester Prison.
Hmm. And the answer is £1,190 for friends of the family. A Hampshire law firm held a quiz night and raised almost £1,200 for Winchester charity Friends of the Family. Blake Morgan's family law team hosted the event, which was entered by other local law firms and barristers, raising £690 for Friends of the Family through ticket sales. The charity quiz is an annual event in the firm's Southampton office, with a different charity dedicated to helping children and families supported each year. Last year, the family law team hosted it in the name of Simon Says, which supports children through bereavement. Friends of the Family's services include help for mothers and fathers with young children, counselling, one-to-one support for children aged 5 to 13, and group activities for children such as after-school workshops and activity days throughout school holidays. An additional £500 is being contributed to the final total from Blake Morgan's chair's charity pot, bringing the final amount to £1,190. This scheme aims to give a boost to fundraising efforts by the firm by building on the amount raised by staff. During the last financial year, the chair's charity pot contributed an additional £5,700 to the firm's charity contributions. Each of Blake Morgan's regional offices has its own chosen charity partner. This year, the Southampton office is also fundraising for Ben Pavitt's Legacy of Love Fund, a fund that contributes to Children's Cancer and Leukemia Group in memory of Ben Pavitt, who passed away from lymphoma aged 16.
102-year-old Mark's birthday with fish and chip supper. This is accompanied by a photograph with the lady concerned, Amy Lanham, sat in a chair in the fish and chip restaurant, and hanging over her head are three gas-filled balloons, Number one, number zero, and number two, 102 years old. A Winchester woman has celebrated her 102nd birthday with fish and chips. Amy Lanham, a resident of Brendon Care St Giles View Care Home, enjoyed a meal at local restaurant Shoal on May the 30th with her son Tony and her daughter Jean. Mrs Lanham worked before World War II as a seamstress in a shirt factory in Cheshire while acting as a surrogate mother to seven younger siblings. She met her husband Mervyn, a Bournemouth resident, whom she married in 1941. The couple moved around the south, settling in Winall and Romsey. After Mervyn died, Amy moved to Lyons Hall in St Swithin Street, Winchester, not in Manchester. Gillian Buxton, wellbeing supervisor at St Giles View, said Amy is such a special lady who loves getting involved in all the activities here. She particularly enjoyed the visit by the Penguins earlier in the year. Brendon St Giles View is run by Winchester-based charity Brendon Care, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Brendon Care provides care homes, extra care housing, and community clubs for older people across southern England. For more details, visit their website at brendoncare.org.uk.
Well, I seem to be the person who is talking about food and wine most of the time. So here is Hampshire's wine to be celebrated at a Fizz Fest. Fizz Fest will return for its 10th year to coincide with the conclusion of this year's English Wine Week. Every summer, Fizz Fest draws more than 1,000 wine enthusiasts. It is the main event for the Vineyards of Hampshire, an association of the wine-producing businesses that promote our country's high-quality wines and wine tourism. This year, it takes place on June the 23rd at The Grange, the winery at Burgess Field Vineyard in Alresford, home to 52,000 vines planted in 2011 that produce its award-winning range. Sam Baring, The Grange's manager partner, said, "Fizz Fest provides the perfect opportunity to taste all of the best wines to be found in Hampshire, and we are very much looking forward to hosting this showcase event, and we are all proud for it to have reached its 10th year. We opened our state-of-the-art winery here in 2022, a splendid design set into the undulating hills with the purpose of servicing our young vineyard and blending and producing our own wine. This year we are now able to do just that. This long-established English Sparkling Wine Festival offers visitors the chance to try more than 20 Hampshire sparkling and still wines. From 12 to 3:30 p.m. you can indulge in the wine tasting experience featuring selections from all 8 members, including Hambledon, renowned for being England's oldest commercial vineyard, planted in March 1952 by Major General Sir Guy Salisbury Jones. Visitors can join a themed masterclass and be taken on a tour of the winery and vineyard. After that, from 3:30 to 4:30, it's time to taste wines, hear live music, try street food, and grab some bottles to enjoy at home. Tickets cost £35 per person plus booking fee, including wine tastings. Masterclasses are £25 plus booking fee with general admission ticket only. Vineyard tours, £12 with general admission ticket only. Book via Eventbrite at vineyardsofhampshire.co.uk/our events. I'll read that again. Eventbrite at vineyardsofhampshire.co.uk/our events. and I can see you all reeling home after having all that wine tasting.
Charity and Green Pledge. On World Environment Day, independent children's charity Wonder Seekers pledged its support to Generate Restoration, aligning with the United Nations 2024 belief in making peace with the land. The pledge coincides with the launch of a new sustainability strategy. With four key guiding principles, the charity intends to utilise its spaces, experience and platform to foster collaboration between children, families, schools and partner organisations and combat climate change and biodiversity loss. Given the high risk children face in the climate crisis aftermath, Wonder Seekers sees its sustainability strategy as a vehicle for demonstrating how science-based actions can address environmental changes. Its venues like the Winchester Science Centre will adopt sustainable design principles to promote biodiversity. Outreach initiatives will focus on equipping children with tools to respond to climate change positively. Additionally, the charity plans to amplify children's voices in environmental issues. Pledges include achieving biodiversity net gain at the Winchester Science Centre and carbon neutrality by 2080. Moreover, it plans to reduce its indirect environmental impacts, champion equitable access to science and nature, create action opportunities for children and families, and support environmental issues of children's concerns. For more information, visit www.wonderseekers.charity/about-us/sustainability.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you've finished with it. Thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our free recordings to you. Goodbye from us, Nikki.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Norma.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. I hope this year's summer will really arrive soon. Goodbye.